Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Special guest today from Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie, at Your Man Divine on Twitter. Dan Divine, how's it going?
Very well, Zach. How are you doing today, man?
I am excellent. I'm awake, and I feel like that's a first step towards starting my day.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I'm hashtag blessed to be here. I think that's a strong start to the day. Anytime you can actually get out of bed, you've at least got something going for you.
I don't hashtag blessed to be here nearly enough. I feel like I should do that every time I go to a game or just like a sandwich shop.
Right. I mean, basically, anytime you get outside of like the 4 feet around your bed, you're kind of winning. So, yeah, it's not a bad way to think about things. Also, shout out to Joe Mandy for really bringing that to my attention. Hashtag blessed. I feel like it's improved the value of my day tenfold.
Yes. Yeah. Joe Mandy has definitely helped in that. And also, Tony Roten, I believe, just thanks God every time he wakes up from a nap or for anything on Twitter. So, I feel like that's also important to note.
That's strong. Well, I mean, you know, he's the one that helped really bring us Team WAP earlier in the season. We handle our problems. I mean, Philly has not done such a great job of that this year, but that's really improved my enjoyment of him, of his game, of Philly, of everything over the course of the last few months.
As ridiculous as Twitter can be, I do feel like it's great, especially when covering the NBA.
Yeah, I think it's there are parts of it that are insane and ridiculous, but there's parts of everything that are insane and ridiculous. As long as you can enjoy the things that are good about it, or get outside of the stuff that can be negative and a bummer, and just sort of appreciate the absurdity for what it is, I think it can be a pretty valuable tool in having a better day. But I guess I kind of have to think that because I'm sure it's the same deal with you. Like, you kind of have to just be on it all the time, or like aware of it at least. So you might as well take the best things you can take from it. And yeah, Tony Roten, thanking God every time he wakes up, that's a pretty good one.
Is there anybody on Twitter, whether it's like in the league or covers the league, that you smile every time they tweet?
Oh, Network.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's the answer to most of those questions. Yeah, that dude's one of my favorite people that I've met doing this stuff. And it's most of the times, or a lot of the things that he... I'm down with corporate America. I work for a family-friendly corporation,
right,
as do you. There's certain things with those that you just can't share, but being able to consume them regularly is always my favorite.
I did like that there was that brief moment of Adam Silver being on Twitter, only it wasn't Adam Silver. And I think Russ Bankston tweeted that Adam Silver's real account is Network. And I kind of wish I'd never met him, because then I could believe it's true.
Right. Yeah, I think that's sort of he was a little bit bummed out about that at first, if I remember correctly. Like, when it came to a situation where he was actually meeting people in real life, it's like, oh no, people don't think I'm just this cute dog anymore.
Right.
And it eliminates a little bit of the air of mystery, but it doesn't take any impact away from how funny that dude is.
He has to probably ease the pain of being a Knicks fan this year for you a little bit, right?
Check out the Segway King over here.
How about that?
Of course. The same thing that makes you laugh will make you cry. So yeah, the practice of being a Knicks fan is often frustrating and saddening and all these things. But guys like Network and Seth Rosenthal of Posting and Toasting is right up at the top of that list as well. There are a few people that are Knicks fans that there's all the Knickerblogger guys. There's a lot of commiserating in trying to find the funniness in some of the most depressing things that you watch. So there's been a lot of practice for that this year.
Let's actually make the Knicks conversation our news and notes segment, brought to you by Squarespace.com. They're only a game and a half back, which is really weird. And yeah, it's because the East sucks. But I do think it's kind of a testament to just how bad they are at doing whatever they need to do. The fact that it kind of seemed like they could have just gone off into the rest of the season, not really tried, just faded into the distance, and then we'd think about them once the playoffs were over. But they got themselves back into it. They're in the race with, I don't know, 10 games to play, and they have a really legitimate shot at making the playoffs. And then if that happens, I feel like it brings up an entire new circus of problems.
Oh yeah, well, that's the double-edged sword, right? No matter what, you know, what the positive things that come out of it are, there's always going to be some drawbacks you've got to deal with. I mean, on a certain level, the fact that the Knicks have worked their way back into this race is perfect, because if only because the Knicks have been so good at doing sort of the exact opposite of what seems like the next logical thing for the Knicks to do would be, after they get to whatever it was 21-40 and were just, you know, dead in the water, looking miserable every night, everything's going wrong, then they rip off the 8-game winning streak and get back into it. And then, of course, as soon as they get back into it, they face a couple of really bad teams. Cleveland, that's really kind of bombed out, and, you know, the Lakers, obviously, you know, having recently just been, you know, annihilated on all levels and decimated by injuries, and they, you know, promptly get housed in those two games. You know, they let Cleveland get back into it, they get housed by the Lakers. And then as soon as that happens, you say, well, okay, then it's all over. Thankfully for Knicks fans that are still hoping for a playoff berth, the Hawks have, you know, been racked by injuries and bad as well, so it still opens the door. I mean, the answer to me, the way I've been sort of handling this, I'm not kidding about this. It's not a goof. I did stop watching them.
Really?
Because it was reaching a point where there was so much, you know, you're flipping around a league pass, right? There's so much you've got to pay attention to or try to be aware of every night. There's, you know, teams that you might not have seen a ton of heading into the playoff, you know, where you kind of want to get up to speed on those teams before you got to start writing preview stuff and all these sorts of things. And it's like, I've watched enough of the Knicks this year. And every time I watch the Knicks, it's something frustrating or that makes me angry. So I was like, I'm kind of going to take a break from this. I'm not going to watch them. That coincided with them going on an 8-game winning streak. And, of course, I'm an idiot, so you're like, well, yeah, you don't want to break up a winning streak. You just kind of keep it going. I mean, there was really no downside to that outside of, you know, I mean, I didn't get to see some of their better ball being played. It reached a point where it's like, if I'm going to watch them, I just keep watching them, and they're going to keep disappointing me and keep being frustrating, then a better solution for me would be not really to pay attention to it, because there's so much other stuff you've got to pay attention to. And now we're at a point, that allowed me kind of to, like, not really believe it, like, not get too wrapped up into it. It's hard now. I'm fighting to, like, keep that level of detachment, because I know the Hawks have been terrible. You know, they had another rough loss last night, and, you know, they without Kyle Korver, without Pero Antic, like, they're a really, like, flailing team. But I don't want to believe that there's a real chance that the Knicks can do it until they're actually in it. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any upside for me to believe that.
Well, yeah, and they do. I mean, they have a brutal schedule to finish out the year.
Oh yeah, they get Phoenix and then Golden State right after that. You know, only one team under 500 the rest of the way, and you know they've been so miserable against even teams that are under 500. You know, like, they almost dropped a game to Philly in this stretch. It seems like there's being pleasantly surprised seems like the best outcome that can come out of this for me.
Do you feel like you want them to make the playoffs? Like, I mean, you're a Knicks fan, so there's got to be, like, some inherent level of, like, oh, yes, I root for this team, they need to make the playoffs, but that would just mean more chances to watch them, I guess, frustrate you.
Yeah, this is a really new experience for me, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, the general sort of standard operating procedure is, you know, I'm a fan of a team, I want to see this team win as much as possible, I want to see them make the playoffs, I want to see them have at least a theoretical chance of a championship, right? Like, you know, you never know, the impossible dream, and everything could go right, and, you know, the road could be paved and all that stuff. But given how frustrating they are, my wife said to me the other night, after she saw what happened with the Laker game and the 51 points in the third quarter and all that, she said to me, like, you know, I think the best thing for you would be if they didn't make the playoffs. Like, you know, it would be, you know, however many, you know, four, five, six, whatever, however many fewer games of you, you know, like, having the roller coaster blood pressure and having it escalate in that way. I mean, like, you can't in good conscience say that you like a team and that they're your favorite team and that you root for them and then hope that they miss the playoffs. But from, like, a quality of life perspective, this is the first time I've ever felt that way. Like, even when they were terrible before and I was younger, it was like, oh, I can deal with that. Like, that's fine, you know, whatever. Because then the next trade, whatever the next thing was going to be, we're going to get Marbury, we're going to get McDice, we're going to do whatever. Like, whatever the next thing was going to be the leap home. And now I just don't see that. Like, now I understand in a different way that that's not the reality of the situation. Like, at some point they're going to have to bring Bargnani back, like, whether it's the end of this season or the beginning of next season, and he's going to be healthy again. And, you know, they're not going to have draft picks. They're not going to have the opportunity to add around the existing infrastructure such as it is. You know, like, I mean, Phil Jackson isn't made of magic, so it's not right. like he's going to be able to just sort of, you know, wave his hand over the roster and all of a sudden all ills will be healed. Like, I understand that stuff in a different way now than I did when I was younger, and that kind of makes it harder to suspend disbelief, I guess.
You and I feel like, well, maybe we did have similar Stephon Marbury experiences. I mean, I caught him for the Timberwolves his first couple of years, where it was like this new exciting player. He was like electrifying. It was all this potential, and then, you know, he was kind of a dick and wanted out, and then I just kind of divorced myself of rooting for him, but I still liked watching him play. Did you have similar, like, oh, this is potentially a great thing for the Knicks, or was it already at a point where you're like, eh, we're the Knicks, it's not going to work?
No, I absolutely bought in, like, for sure. I was, I was 20, 21 years old, something like that at that time, and looked, you know, when the news happened, it was because there was that way of, the way that Isaiah made deals was a way that made a lot of sense to, you know, like to a younger person that didn't sort of think big picture.
Right.
Like, if you're only thinking about what's, you know, and yeah, you're 20 years old, you're only thinking about literally like the next thing. Like, I have to eat, I have to get drunk, I have to miss class, whatever. Isaiah got the best guy in the trade, you know, right? That was the way that every Isaiah deal went. The most talented guy in the trade came back. Forget about the draft picks, forget about the contracts, forget about the age, forget about whatever. The most talented guy came back. So you thought about that, and you started to think, like, well, who was the last, like, super talented point guard the Knicks had? Well, have they had a really, like, a guy who could, you know, pop for 40 or, you know, put up a triple-double or whatever? Have we had any, you know, one of those guys at the point in a long time? Hey, maybe not. Like, oh, this, and also there's, like, the, you know, you get sucked into the homecoming story and all that kind of
right.
stuff. And it became really easy to like that idea. And then, of course, you see it in practice. And then, especially when you surround, the Steve Francis deal and the Jalen Rose deal and all these other deals that sort of come down the pike, you're like, okay, there's no thought process. There's no organizational plan beyond let's get the talented guy. And then, you know, that's sort of it puts you in that, you know, perpetual rebuild of like redevelopment hell. But, you know, I mean, that made sense to me. Like, it totally made sense to me, which is why a 20-year-old kid shouldn't be running an NBA team. You know, little big league would be bad if you spun it forward a couple of years and put it in the NBA. But,
right.
It's a point, you know, where you still, like, you know, the way that Marbury's career ended, it sort of seems like the only way it kind of could have ended for him with the petering out and, you know, becoming irrelevant and then going to a far-flung foreign land and becoming extremely relevant. It's like the sort of conquering, foreign land hero story. But it didn't really work out too well for Knicks fans.
I guess I'm just now looking up his numbers as like a refresher, and he really wasn't that bad. He just wasn't good enough, I guess.
The statistical output was good. I mean, you know, they were a better offense with him on the floor than off it, if memory serves. And they just, but there was like the way with everything else. It's, you know, because that, you know, it's not like adding, you know, 45 home run, 130 RBI hitter in the middle of the lineup. Like, you need other guys around it to work. And also, and Marbury was never much of a defender too. So it's like you can have a guy who can score, he can get his own buckets, who can, create shots for others, but they were bad defensive teams and other guys weren't making shots. So it's kind of like, and of course, obviously the personality didn't necessarily mesh as well with everybody else in the locker room. And it's the difference between a guy who was good, put up like fringe all-star kind of numbers, but thought he was Jason Kidd.
Right.
And those two things never really dovetailed for him.
I'm looking at the trade on Basketball Reference. It's a fascinating trade. I mean, he got traded with Anthony Hardaway to the Knicks for Howard Eisley, Maciej Lampe. I can't remember.
Maciej Lampe,
yeah. Antonio McDyess, Charlie Ward, and then two first-round picks that ended up being Kirk Snyder, who I was certain was going to be a perennial All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't quite work out. And then the pick that ended up being Gordon Hayward.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't realize that it spun that far into the future.
Yeah,
that deal.
I didn't either, but that was a 2004 pick, and this was made in 2004, so that makes sense. But then a 2010 pick that ended up being Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, it's the thing that Knicks fans. I mean, there's always that like long argument about you can't rebuild in New York. Fans won't stand for it. They want it better now. To whatever degree that's true depends on which fans you're talking to, you know. But right. Like, there's also the understanding that, well, we, you know, none of the guys they gave up at that moment, you know, McDyess had obviously had his injury issues, and, you know, no one had massive amounts of love for Howard Eisley and Charlie Ward at that point, and Lampe was a guy that people were psyched about him coming over from Europe when they made the deal. They thought he had a really high ceiling during sort of the height of that. Any guy that comes over from Europe might become Dirk, like that, you know, right. There was that sort of general idea.
And I may be wrong on this, but I kind of remember him being, like, projected as a top five pick for a long time when he was first coming out, and I think that was, like, the 2003 draft. I kind of remember him being projected as, like, a top lottery pick for a while, and then he just faded into, like, maybe the second round or something like that. And then once he was going to come over again, it was like, oh, well, now, remember, this guy was so good. He was such a highly touted prospect, and then nothing came of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was one of those things where, like, you know, you look at the postmortems, and it was, you know, this might be a steal. You know, this guy's got lottery type talent, and they got him this low in the draft. And there was I kind of remember getting inordinately excited about the idea of Maciej Lampe and Slavko Vranić being like this giant front court of the future with skills, and obviously that worked out super well for everybody involved. But the Hayward thing is really interesting to me because when you focus on the players, like, not really focusing, you know, feeling like you're losing too much in the deal, right? Like, well, the players here that are here now, none of these guys are really big deals, and we're bringing back this great talent, Stephon Marbury, who's still sort of in his prime years and is young and can keep going and blah, blah, blah. And you don't think about the fact that there's future pieces too. You have no idea who's going to be good enough in a few years to take with that draft pick or what you can get back from it. And there's also, I mean, the double-edged sword there with the Knicks fans too is like Knicks fans remember that for the most part, for like 15 years, all of the players the Knicks drafted were terrible. There were hardly any real starters. I think only maybe one All-Star between like the early 90s or between like, you know, like the Mark Jackson and like the mid-2000s or late 2000s, like David Lee was the only guy that made an All-Star team, right, as a member of the Knicks from those first-round picks. But then you spin most of those picks forward into the future, and like, you know, number one picks that the Knicks traded away wound up turning into, not, I mean, Hayward and also like Joakim Noah and LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, down the line, those deals, you know, when those picks get sort of banged around and moved around and shifted around, those, they wind up being major players that could be hugely impactful, you know, later. And it's really easy now to look at it and say, well, what if you put those three guys alongside like Melo and, you know, any other, you know, any non-Raymond Felton point guard?
Right.
And you know, they need to really have something there. And it's not that simple, but it's also it's instructive to remember that stuff when you talk to fans that are like, well, who cares? Draft picks, you know, who knows? It's a crapshoot. It's like, yeah, but it's a crapshoot. You know, you can win at craps sometimes.
Right. I mean, you could put in a little amount of money and walk away with a lot.
Right, yeah. It might not happen all the time, but it could. And, you know, that's very different than putting – but that's, it's never been the organizational model. The organizational model has been put in a lot of money and walk away with very little.
What is the draft experience like for you? Because you don't – I mean, there's no pick this year. As a Knicks fan, you're always – I mean, it's like every other year, you don't even have to worry about it. Whereas as a Timberwolves fan, like, the draft is such a huge part of being disappointed as a Timberwolves fan at year in and year out that like, we're dying to keep a 13th pick this year. And I wonder, yeah, like, what's that experience like as a Knicks fan, knowing that every other year you just get to take that night off?
That's a good way of putting it. It's frustrating, I think, because you want, you know, yeah, like, that's, I wrote something this week about the Utah Jazz and the way the fans are sort of responding to this year's Jazz team, and, you know, the players don't really like that the fans might be rooting for losses because they're working really hard, but fans also feel like, well, this is the organizational blueprint right now, play the young guys, you know, get a high draft pick, you know, like, the whole rebuilding, tanking, debate, discussion as it goes on, and one of the things that I kind of, you know, came around to as I was writing that stuff was that, you know, fans are not going to be not excited. Like, if you're a fan, part of being a fan is finding something to be excited about. And like for the Jazz fans, I mean, if you're in the middle of like a 22-win season, you're going to get excited about who you might pick at the top of the draft. Like whenever you talk to, you know, radio people out there or Jazz fans, it's like, well, what do you think of Parker? What do you think of Randall? What do you think of Wiggins? What do you know, all that stuff. So it's frustrating as a Knicks fan to have that element of excitement sort of sapped out of the mix. Like, there's not even that kind of thing that you can get super amped about, like, who are they going to get back in this situation? It does make the horse trading kind of wheeling and dealing on draft night a little bit more, where you're like, yeah, all right, that's everybody else is involved in that and not us. It's frustrating, too, to look at it from the perspective of, like, because even I guess Knicks fans don't take nights off. Like, they... Even when the Knicks don't play, if other teams that are ahead of the Knicks lose and it's like a thing where the Knicks could be taking advantage of that, it's like, well, yeah, but they suck so much because they lost this game and this game and this game and they're not taking maximum advantage of it. Like, they're so terrible and I hate them. And, I mean, like, that's legit. I mean, like, the Knicks lose 42 games this season, and that's one of the most frustrating things about this year is that, like, the blueprint for how they've been, when they've made their runs and when they've been good, is basically the same exact thing as they did last year. And if you take out the Andrea Bargnani games, like, they're still like a top five, top six offense, and you know they've been good enough on offense to overcome their terrible defense like they were last year. It's just like the thing that everyone knew was bad at the time was so monumentally bad as to completely tilt them from like a multiple games above 500 team with a top six offense to, you know, a team that is going to be in the lottery in all likelihood. So I mean, those things are frustrating, on a different, maybe a different level than not having the draft pick. But then you remember that you gave away draft picks for Andrea Bargnani, and the frustration sort of coalesces.
Wanted to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. They're constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with, all the style options you could possibly want. Create a unique website for yourself, for your business, whatever you'd like. Incredibly easy to use, but if you need some help, Squarespace has the manpower to help you. Over 100 Squarespace employees in the New York City office, nicknamed the Care Bear Layer. That's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week support to help get you going. And it's incredibly inexpensive, great deal. Starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that helps match the overall style of your website. So your content's going to look great on every device, every computer, iPhone, iPad, Galaxy Notebook, whatever you want to do, it's going to look great. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, please go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports. Make sure to use the offer code FUN, that's FUN. You're going to get 10% off, and you get to show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast. We thank Squarespace for their support of the podcast. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website. Has there been a more frustrating player for you to root for than Andrea Bargnani? I mean, I know Felton has been just atrocious this year.
That's some kind of power ranking, right?
Yeah.
Nick's frustration power rankings. We got to make sure that we tell Seth that. Seth's got to write that.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess I would say Felton more than Bargnani, because the reality of the situation is that, like, it's not Bargnani's fault, really. Like, he is who he is. He's been the player that he's been over the however many years. Like, expecting him to not be a bad defender who doesn't rebound and isn't as good a shooter as you think is ridiculous, because all that stuff's there. It's there in the numbers. It's there on film. It's like there's a reason people wrote that, because it was something that you could see coming. So the stuff where, you know, like, he was doing, you know, what they wanted him to do. He was doing what they asked him to do. He just wasn't very good at it. And for people to expect that to not be the case was kind of like, I mean, you can't really, you know, blame people for not having an encyclopedic knowledge of Toronto Raptors basketball over the last half dozen years, but that was one of those things that was out there, you know?
Yeah, the information's there.
Right, yeah. There were pretty simple, you know, pretty easy ways to figure that one out. And but again, that was another one of those deals where people were like, well, I mean, Camby didn't really give them much last year, and Novak was, you know, a shell of himself in the playoffs, and he can't create off the dribble, and, you know, he's not, you know, like, yeah, he's a good shooter, but he doesn't give you much else. And there are ways to make that trade, you know, if you are inclined to believe in the best and be the most hopeful version of a Knicks fan, like, there were ways to explain that away. And then you forget about the fact that they give up the pick swap rights and that they're giving up multiple second rounders in the future because, again, well, second round picks don't really matter, you know, okay, unless they turn into Chandler Parsons.
Right.
And yeah, that's rare, but that's valuable. And that's, you know, hitting a home run. So it's that thing. The Felton thing, though, is frustrating. Oh, man, we can really not. I don't want to, like, you know, iceberg this and just go all the way down below the surface to the giant thing underneath. But
no, let's do that. Let's do exactly that.
let's do precisely that. Because I mean, it's tiresome to me to where it's not even really – it's not worth doing it on a night-to-night basis. But the reality is everything that Raymond Felton does or doesn't do circles back as a referendum on their decision to sign and trade for him and not match the offer sheet to Jeremy Lin.
Yeah.
Now – Jeremy Lin obviously has not been an all-star. He's not become somebody that's an ascendant, burning talent that everyone in the league would jump over themselves to have. But that was a player who was had the chance of getting better, who showed some flashes of things that were very interesting. Obviously, and it's kind of an understatement. And that they could have kept in house. All it would have cost them was money and not future assets. And Felton was another guy who kind of was what he was. Like, there was, that was out there. That was on film. That was in the stats. And the decision to go that direction, not only took away something, one of those few things that fans had gotten excited about, but, limited options for where the Knicks could go offensively and, the prospect of having a decent, defensive point guard that could stop some perimeter penetration, all these kind of things went by the wayside and kind of set the table for some bad news in the future. I mean, that's before you even get to Webbins charges. So,
right.
That's been a frustrating thing as well.
God, I'm looking at his numbers. I didn't realize he was under 40% from the field on the year. And he's not even making, he's a career 78% free throw shooter. He's making 70% this year, which isn't awful, but it's not good, especially for a point guard. Like, does he try at anything on the court?
He has good hustle faces. when they get a dead ball turnover, like someone sort of, the Knicks get a successful trap that forces a point guard to pick up the ball and shuffle his feet or something like that. Felton's really good at pumping his fist and going like, yeah, we got him. That's a valuable asset, I suppose. I don't know what the advanced metrics are on that, but, he gets amped for himself. That's cool. He's really good at getting, I shouldn't say he's really good, but he has shown on multiple occasions this year to be good at getting hurt in the middle of a game, grimacing and kind of limping it off, prompting Mike Woodson to call a timeout, and then I guess somewhere in the huddle convincing Woodson that he's good enough to go right back on the court and kind of limp through a few more possessions.
So all they've done is waste a timeout.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we just wasted a timeout, and he's good to go. But he gets, blown past on the perimeter, and he, short arms, has no legs on his jumper, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, there's a lot of those sorts of things. But, I mean, he's a bulldog. He's feisty. He's et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all the things that you say, but that don't actually turn into anything. I guess he'd be the frustration MVP this season.
Do you still, look at what Jeremy Lin's doing? I mean, obviously, you cover the league, so you watch him, but do you still look at Jeremy Lin and think, oh, I wish you were over here?
Not really. I mean, because at this point, it's just it's that sort of asked and answered, moving on.
Yeah.
I think it worked out really well for him in that, he's put in a situation where, no one saw the Patrick Beverley thing coming, that guy was going to come in, fit really well next to Harden, give them a defensive perimeter presence, and, sort of kick Lin to that six-man role where it kind of seems to make so much sense for him. So he gets paid really well to be the third guard on a really good team. I think that works out awesome for him.
Right.
And by the time, when his next contract comes up, he'll still be young enough and, have made enough improvements and put enough on tape to be able to, in all likelihood, get, a starting opportunity somewhere else. So I think that works out super well. When the Knicks have routinely run out a negative player at the point guard for 32, 33 minutes a game or whatever over the course of the season, it's easy to sort of look at that and say, well, I wish there was somebody better in this situation. It's moved on a little bit though from Lin. I think there's been enough of those games, the head-to-head things, or where he's come back to the Garden a couple times, and the storylines swell up, and you're kind of like, all right, well, yeah, if that was neat, remember when that thing happened, and it would be awesome to have more of that, but It sort of moved on to stuff like, well, should they have made the Kyle Lowry deal and given up like their 2018 future first right. round or whatever, you know, like, you know, and that's, you know, like the pursuit of a good point guard continues, but I think it's moved on a little bit from Jeremy Lin.
You said earlier that, you know, in New York, you're not really allowed to just like rebuild, right? Like you can't go about that process. But at a certain point, like if none of this is working, although I mean, I know it worked last year, but not like you've had so much hilarious debauchery with this franchise that like at some point, couldn't you just say, no, we should try like rebuilding. Let's see if we can make that work. Or is that just, I mean, I know you're asking James Dolan to do something that wouldn't be exciting to him, but there's got to be a point, like a breaking point, right?
I mean, you'd think and that's exactly it. You know, it's really the Dolan thing. You know, I mean, the people who push you can't rebuild in New York tend to be the ones who are always willing and want to spend on like the flashiest, shiniest new thing, and that's, I mean, like the instant gratification thing. I get, you know, it makes sense, but yeah, right. You know, insanity is, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, and that's what the last, you know, whatever 15 years in Knicks basketball has been, except for last year when, you know, Lucy let the football stay on the ground and Charlie Brown got to kick it to an Atlantic Division title.
Right.
I think, but I mean, that's so the example of this, the one time in recent memory that they actually went about this process was when Donnie Walsh was in the house. So they brought Donnie Walsh back to say, you got to completely disentangle our cap and, you know, get rid of dead money. And, you know, we need to go about the process of rebuilding. And then they sign Amare. And obviously that worked out how that's worked out. But that first half year, they weren't a title contender, but that was a team where they were getting cheaper, they were getting younger, they were getting as much sort of production as they could out of the, you know, the young and expensive guys that they brought on board. And then that was what the blueprint was, right? That was the blueprint in action. And then the Carmelo trade happened, and I mean, I was, you know, I'm not going to lie, like I wanted Carmelo Anthony on the team. Like I wrote about that, like, again, the point of being a fan is to, you know, enjoy what you're watching. And I really, like, the Knicks had never had a player like Carmelo in my lifetime, so I really wanted to see that. But, yeah, they gave away, you know, half that roster. They completely jacked up their books. Then the eventual, you know, I mean, it's all been written a million times before, the amnesty of Billups and, you know, these sorts of things, you know, like the way they junked up the cap in that way, made it so that you couldn't use the amnesty on Amari later after all the knee injuries. That kind of betrayed the blueprint, but they tried it once. It worked. They, you know, Dolan once said, like, I'm going to give a basketball grown-up the opportunity to make all the decisions that he wants to make, and then, you know, like a year and a half in or whatever, kind of said, no, we're going to do this thing. And that set the franchise in a very different direction. So the question is, you know, much has been made of Dolan saying at the Phil Jackson press conference, like, I'm not an expert in basketball. I'm going to let the basketball experts make the decisions. Obviously, Phil Jackson has a little bit of a different level of cachet than, you know, Donnie Walsh does, you know, what with all the rings and everything. But Donnie Walsh was also like a career personnel guy who knew exactly how to go about dismantling and rebuilding a team. And Phil Jackson comes from a sort of a different perspective. If Dolan really is going to fall back, then that's one of those things, you know, where Knicks fans grasp for hope. That's one of them. And I don't know. And then the question will be, will Phil Jackson be into a proper rebuild, or is he looking at it and saying, well, no, we're going to re-up Carmelo for as much as we need to re-up him for, and then we're just going to add pieces around. And what probably would happen in that case is a couple more decent teams fall short, and then the Knicks are looking to rebuild their cap situation, like, up to 2020. Yeah, I know, right? It's a little bit cloudy here in Brooklyn, so I'm feeling a little bit down in the dumps. But yeah, I think that's kind of what you're looking for. I don't know that anybody really has. No one's tested, or very few teams have tested out the "you can't rebuild in New York" thing. I think people accept it as a truism that hasn't really been given a chance to breathe. So it'll be interesting to see just how much Phil is willing to let that happen, and if it's a painful experience, if Dolan's still willing to fall back. I don't know. I'm skeptical of that. I'm skeptical about most of these things, as you can probably tell.
Do you want Carmelo re-upped? And if so, are you comfortable with a five-year, $130 million contract?
Oh, I can't imagine how you could be comfortable with 5 years, $130 million. That's so much money.
That is a lot of money.
That's a staggering amount. Even if the cap continues to go up and up and up, like, you know, reaching amazing levels, that's so much money. And you're going to be paying him, you know, that, you know, the top end of that deal into his, what, you know, age 33, 34, 35 seasons,
right,
for a guy who's played, you know, a lot of basketball. You know, it was, you know, if they missed the playoffs this year, I think this is the first time he will have ever missed the playoffs. And so he's played into the postseason every year of his pro career. He played a year in college. He's played international ball a lot. Like, he doesn't seem like a very old guy, but he's also been around for a while. And a lot of those guys that don't seem like old guys are starting to get up there. And especially, like, if the Knicks continue to go through seasons like this, where he's playing 39 minutes a night, you know, it's scary. You know, we have models where we've seen things in the past where guys who have played that kind of load when they get into their, you know, early to mid 30s start to, you know, break down in pretty significant ways. I would love it if, I mean, in a perfect world, yeah, you go for, like, the, you know, either you sell him on the idea of taking like the mini max kind of deal, like, you know, okay, well, you know, we'll max you, we'll give you the max for a shorter term, and then give you the opportunity to get out earlier if you want to,
right?
And then, you know, you kind of shorten the horizon, but this might be his last shot at a big full max deal, so it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, shot the moon for it, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, Phil Jackson has said, like, I have no problem saying that he's in the future plans, and I think we can build around him, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they did it. But, yeah, signing off on 5 years, $130 million for a guy who's about to turn 30 strikes me as sort of a scary deal, even if I think that guy is, like, he provides that level or near that level of production on the offensive end, at least right now, but I don't know that I see that extending for the next 5 years.
Obviously, there's all the stuff about his defense and, you know, he could move the ball a little bit more, he could be a better defender. But are you happy with his play? Because it does seem like, in as bad as this season has been for the team, like, he at least appears, from the outsider looking in, that he's giving his all and he's doing what he can on the offensive end. Like, he's putting up good numbers, he's putting up good efforts, it seems like. Are you happy with what he's done, or does he need to do more?
I think, you know, unfortunately, the answer is probably a little of column A, a little of column B. You know, I think that critiques of his game that suggest that he does nothing but score are outdated. I mean, he's improved as a facilitator. He's a better passer and a more willing passer than he has been in the past. The assist numbers are never going to be huge because the offense is geared around him shooting. But, he's better at it, and he's more willing to do it than he ever has been. He's taken on a huge rebounding responsibility on the team, especially, you know, they've been so thin up front all year, especially, you know, when Chandler was out, especially, and, sort of unwillingness to give some of those young guys that are basically just rebounders and shot blockers, guys like Cole Aldrich and Jeremy Tyler, like, give them a little bit more run.
Right.
He's had to do an awful lot at the four spot there. The defense, yeah, the defense is a legitimate knock. I mean, you think back to even that play in the Dallas game where Dirk hit the sort of awkward buzzer beater.
Yeah.
And it looks like Carmelo is playing great defense because he's right in his face, but as Dirk raises up to shoot the ball, Carmelo's hands are down by his sides. Like, you're not even, like, now granted, it's hard to contest Dirk no matter what, but you can at least get your hands up on him. That might be a good idea. If you have Dirk Nowitzki at 15 feet away staring at the basket shooting basically a foul shot, you might want to get your hands up. Those things are real. But then again, I mean, it's the same kind of thing that people have talked about with guys like James Harden or guys like Kobe over the last couple of years, where if so much of the offensive responsibility falls on one guy creating or one guy, you know, being that engine, you can allow for a little bit of a taper off on the other end, or you sort of need to, because it's unrealistic to expect somebody to be that on both ends all the time, unless that person's like LeBron. And I mean,
right,
as we've sort of established over the course of however many years now, 10, 11 years, that's not who Carmelo is. And it's okay. You know, you're allowed to be like one of the 10 or 15 best players in the league at a given time, even if you're not the best. You know, you're allowed to, but then you have to do other things, and the team has to do other things to sort of build around that. The reality is they wouldn't even, as we saw last year too, like, they weren't going to win that series with just Carmelo
right.
against the Pacers. Like, they needed other people to do other things, and they needed, frankly, a coach that was going to figure out what the things to do and not do were, and he made the exact wrong decision in that series by going saying, you know, we've got to get big and sort of try to match the Pacers physically instead of we got to go small and spread them out and make them guard us. And then that's the lesson that Woodson took into this season as well, and that the front office seems to have taken into the season, which predicated the Bargnani trade and those sorts of things. And then obviously, as soon as the options for Woodson to go big were like eliminated via injury, then they went small, and then they started scoring like a top five offense. So, I don't know. I think Carmelo is never going to be. I think he can be the best player on a championship team, but you have to do it like Dallas did in 2010. Like that, it has to be a team that is built so specifically about providing the shooting around him and providing the defensive backbone behind him and having multiple guys in the perimeter that can sort of slow things down and make things a little bit easier for him.
You've been doing this as a job for a few years now, right?
It's weird, right?
It's really weird. Do you find, like, Zach Lowe's talked about this, and I try to be a more patient and a calmer fan than I was in the past, and certainly some of that comes with age and hopefully maturing, or at least pretending to mature. But I do feel a little more numb to, like, all of the losses with the Timberwolves and then not making the playoffs. Like, I would love for them to make the playoffs, but if it doesn't happen, I personally just move on to covering the playoffs. And so, you know, I can kind of detach myself from that disappointment. Do you find that it's made you, I don't know if more of a fan or less of a fan is the right wording, but do you find it's made you a different type of fan, or were you just kind of headed that way anyway?
Yeah, that's tough to say. I mean, I definitely do think it's different. I love Zach. Zach, you know, he's always been a good dude to me, and I think he's amazing at what he does. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to fully divest from the fandom that I have for my favorite team. Like, I think part of the reason you get into this is because you like writing about this enough to where you are doing it when you should be doing your real job, and then eventually, eventually over the course of time, that, you know, if you're lucky enough, that kind of the calculus tilts a little bit.
By the way, I'd like to thank the Third District Court of Appeal in Sacramento for allowing me to work on my. Well, they didn't know it, but for letting
they
weren't
me allowing you.
Yeah, for at least not being aware enough to let me work on my website all those years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, it wasn't like they were setting aside an hour or so for you to be able to put a post up. And the same thing here. The Bay State Banner, Boston's longest running African American weekly. Thank you so much. We'll have to talk about that another time. But when that sort of tilts, when that moves, you're like, okay, well, I'm writing about this stuff because I care enough about it, and because it's sort of motivating me in this way. I think I still probably write longer and more, you know, detailed about the Knicks than I do about any other team. Like, when I write about them, I think I feel like I have to get as much of the thoughts in as I can, whereas some other teams are like, okay, well, I don't have to, this doesn't have to be like my magnum thesis or whatever. Like, but it does, yeah. I mean, a lot of it's sort of a time commitment. Like, when there's a Knick game on, I mean, before my recent epiphany that I don't have to watch it, and then if I don't, they'll win. But when there's a Knick game on, I watch it, you know, and I'll be flipping around to the other games during commercials or during, you know, stoppages in play or whatever, but I'll be watching that as my prime thing. And now there's been more of a point of, like, you just can't do that. Like, there's too many teams and there's too much going on every night for you to just only hone in on this one thing. And that's different. I didn't used to watch. I mean, I didn't even used to have League Pass. You know, I didn't have, you know, before I started doing this as a full-time thing. I wasn't watching 30 teams. I wasn't trying to catch, you know, 43 games a night. These sorts of things. I was just watching the Knicks and then whoever the Knicks were playing, and then, like, checking the stats and the highlights. And
right.
You can't do that the same way now. So, yeah, I mean, it does sort of de-emphasize, it turns the volume down a little bit on the degree to which you're a fan of the one thing. But I don't get as animated about other teams' point guard decisions, or, you know, who's giving up second round picks for which tall forward. That stuff remains reserved for the guys in the blue and the orange.
Do you still get to, like, watch basketball games? Like, I've had this conversation with a lot of friends. They're like, do you ever just get to watch as a fan? And I feel like no, because I've conditioned myself to, like, do all this over analytical thinking and trying to decipher what is actually going on, that I don't know that I can just sit down and watch a game, like, and just enjoy a game. Do you find yourself in that position at all, or can you still kind of divorce yourself from that mentality?
No, yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that it's, you know, I tend not to work on weekends. That's been basically like a deal breaker with my wife. If you're going to be turning in like 70-hour regular work weeks, then we've got to, you know, like, we need to like go have dinner on a Saturday.
Right.
So that kind of thing, right? But then, you know, there will be times where, yeah, you're catching like the Sunday matinee, or you're watching, you know, a Saturday night game. And it's really hard not to view all of these things from a framework of either A, this play would make a good post, or be like, you just tell, like, instinctively reaching for the keyboard, like, gotta find a dead code, or B, like, yeah, oh, that's interesting, they're doing this thing differently, that's something to keep an eye on, you know, like, or this guy's really been on a good run, I wonder what his last 10 games have looked like. That stuff, it's really hard to turn that stuff off. But that's, what's kind of interesting is that's made, like, I haven't gotten to watch a lot of the NCAAs, a lot of March Madness, but like when I have watched some of those games, that's been easier. Because I mean, I don't make any pretension to know and to have nuanced takes on draft prospects. I'm going to be doing what everybody else is doing, which is like jamming Draft Express into my brain in the week before the draft, and you know, trying to read up as much as I can and watch as much film as I can. But I'm not there now, and I won't be there now. So when you're just watching like Mercer and Duke, like, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, I'm interested in, you know, how Jabari Parker might translate, but on other things, you're sort of like, oh, wow, this is cool. just a thing I don't have to have any attachment, either emotional attachment to, or, you know, thinking about what I can turn this into later. I can just, for like 45 minutes, watch two possessions of this game, because that's how long possessions take in college.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, well, I pointed it out. made sure you saw it. Really bad magician. But yeah, I mean, it's a little bit harder to do that. I mean, frankly, what's weird to me, like, you're a Braves fan, right?
Right.
And you are a Niners fan,
right?
We've had our blood feuds in the past.
Yes, we
Giants.
We have.
I find it now a little bit harder. Even like to a certain extent, even with those other sports that I don't write about, I find it a little bit harder to get as invested and committed in those other things too, because it's more like, oh yeah, like, we got to get out of the house, or I can't, with the exception of NFL mock drafts, for whatever reason, that is my catnip and my kryptonite. Every time one of those goes up, I'm like, oh, who are the Giants taking? Even though I have no idea who we're talking about.
Right.
I have a harder time dialing in on all the rest of that stuff now, because it's like, if I'm not watching NBA to write about it, I really need to be doing something else. I need to be reading something. I need to, like, go out for a run. I need to go to, you know, like, we have to do something else. And that's been a really interesting change. Like, I don't know if I can do and this is maybe not everybody, maybe it's just me, but I don't know if I can do this job this way and be, like, an omni-sports fan.
Yeah, well, like, especially with at least for me in the baseball season, it's like, aside from this one where in spring training, all of the Braves have gotten injured. So it's actually
right.
Just allowed me to be like, oh, I don't care about the season then. Like, we're already done, so that's good. I can just relax. But it's always been like, oh, I'm going to watch every game. I'm going to watch everything. Like, it's perfect. Like, they have day games. I can watch while I work, and it's perfect background noise and all that stuff. But then it's like the playoffs are here while the season is getting started in baseball. And I just there's just not time in the day to, you know, invest into a 2.5-3 hour game. And it gets to a point where all of a sudden it's like, all right, now it's late June, now I can start my baseball season. And then by then, I don't find myself caring nearly as much as I used to. And then like a playoff push can get me really into it. But I definitely find myself being a much more casual baseball fan than I ever was.
Yeah, for sure. I was one of my friends, you know, kid I grew up with is a, you know, diehard Yankee fan, actually works for Major League Baseball. And, you know, all growing up, it was, you know, mine is a Mets fan family. So yet another blood feud topic,
yes,
if we ever sort of circle back around. You know, we would always have that sort of back and forth, you know, okay, well, you know, Yankees suck, Mets suck. He was right, I was wrong. But then also like, okay, well, you know, talking about prospects and, you know, what are you looking forward to the season? What are you doing with the fifth starter spot, all that stuff? And my best friend got married last weekend, and I was talking to him and his brother, and I realized they knew they were like totally up on all of the Mets, you know, major issues and like the questions facing them and the prospects to watch. And I didn't even know who they were talking about. Like, I was lost. I was like, David Wright's still on the team? Dope. All right, cool. Is he still wearing that big helmet? And that was like the extent of what I knew. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess that's done. Like, I guess the time where I'm going to be like up on the Baseball America top 100 as to who the, knowing how to pronounce guys' names is going to be like, that's over. It's a wrap. It's just not going to happen. And I mean, the trade-off of that is like, whereas when I first got this job or when I first was freelancing and trying to make this into a full-time job, there were very few things that I felt like I could, you know, really talk comfortably about or confidently about. Like, there would be teams where you would ask and I would have zero idea, you know, like what the state of affairs was and whatever. Now that's changed. Like, now I feel like, I can go on, you know, shows or podcasts or talk to people or whatever about, you know, each of the, 30 teams and at least know something about what to talk about, right, or what's going on with them. But that means, like, I know fewer things about almost everything else, not just sports, but also like regular life stuff. It's a change. It's been a change in fandom that's sort of been the result of, I'm sure there are plenty of readers that wouldn't call me a professional, but professionalization has sort of had that natural out product, and that's kind of been interesting to feel that developing.
Yeah, thank God for the Daily Show, because otherwise I would have no idea what's going on in the rest of the world other than what happens on an NBA court.
Right, right.
That's literally like my only outlet. I'm like, I hope they're not making this up. I hope this is a real story, because I'm going to talk about it the next time I'm with people.
I'm just going to accept it as a given that, you guys aren't screwing me over here. You're steering me straight.
Well, Dan, we can read you on Ball Don't Lie, Yahoo Sports, and follow you on Twitter at Your Man Divine. Always a pleasure. I love talking to you. And I would say you're uncomfortably nice, mostly because we do have blood feuds that you make me feel bad about.
It's kind of you to say. I don't go for trying to make people uncomfortable with how nice I am, but I guess it's better than the alternative. Like, you're really comfortably a jerk.
That's actually on my business card. Comfortably a jerk.
Oh, man, I gotta go up on my Vista print. But, a pleasure to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.